On the 25th of April every year, Adélie penguins in the Antarctic begin their annual northward migration. This day has now become known internationally as World Penguin Day. So guys, what did you do on the 25th of April? How did you celebrate World Penguin Day, John?
I watched some YouTube videos of penguins getting tickled.
Penguins getting tickled? Is that legal?
Yes, I hope so. Anyway,
yeah. Cool.
It was awesome.
Effie?
I will hide them from Batman.
You'll hide penguins from Batman. Andrew?
I watched the Pittsburgh Penguins absolutely thrash the arse off of Tampa Bay Lightning in the playoffs. It was awesome.
Hey, Graham?
You know when you sent that email asking to think of something funny to say when I ask about Penguin Day?
Yeah.
I thought you'd ask later on in the podcast so I'd have, you know, another 20 minutes. I haven't got anything to say. Penguins, they're lovely.
Oh, that's so great. I actually spent my World Penguin Day grafting a laser onto the Tux droid, the robotic penguin that we reviewed in the previous issue of Linux Format.
Ah, cool.
Just ace. So there we go. So it's Season 3, Episode 8 of the Tux Radar podcast. I'm Mike Saunders.
I'm Jonathan Roberts.
I'm Efrain Hernandez.
I'm Andrew Gregory. And I'm Graham Morrison.
Absolutely fantastic. So in this episode, we'll be talking about Ubuntu 11.04, OpenOffice.org. We've got our discoveries. We've got our You Dare Us challenge. We've got Speak Your Brains. We've got Open Ballot and much more. If you love this podcast, you'll absolutely love our magazine, which you can subscribe to at tuxradar.com/subscribe. And in the upcoming issue, which should be on sale very, very soon, we have a new coding supplement, which is 3 tutorials.
It's a whole extra 16 pages for the magazine.
Yeah.
Which hopefully will be a permanent edition.
That'll be great.
And the DVD is in a wallet.
The DVD is in a very fancy, shiny, glossy
hopefully
wallet now.
Permanently.
Yeah.
Lovely package.
Budget permitting. Yeah.
It's a lovely package and all this stuff extra free with your magazine. So, straight into the news, and we've got a bit of a confession to make. Because of the Easter break, we're recording this a few days before it actually hits the website.
Yeah, because I'm taking today off.
Essentially. And we're
and
all
so
going
are
to,
you.
Yeah, and we're all going to the royal wedding as well, so...
do you have to feed the flames?
So, yeah, Ubuntu 11.04 will have been released, hopefully, by the time this podcast goes out.
Yes.
With this whole new, massively controversial Unity interface.
Yeah, we've given Unity quite a bit of airtime, haven't we?
Yeah,
quite a bit of coverage. I have upgraded to the very latest packages in my version of Kubuntu. And for this challenge, I installed GNOME 3.0 through a PPA for 11.04. God, that sounds geeky.
Wow.
But so far, okay. Pretty good. I don't use GNOME. I don't use Unity, so I haven't had any cause to try it.
Well, I'm thinking that I normally would go for Zubuntu straight away.
So what date is this podcast going out on?
Today is the 28th of April, 2011.
Today, does that mean that we're allowed to talk about the things that Canonical embargoed us to prevent us from talking about?
Well done for getting that in.
Absolutely, we are.
Oh, that's great. Some chaps from Canonical came to show us Unity. I was actually installing Ubuntu, you know, as they arrived, so it's not that, you know, I saw any great secrets that I couldn't have found out for myself. And also, the code being open source anyway does rather obviate, it doesn't obviate, it renders, it makes it completely obsolete, the idea of any embargoes on the stuff.
I don't get that, yeah. You just try the beta release and see all these features.
I think Canonical may be turning into an evil megacorp
with
sharks with laser beams on their heads.
Oh, no. Don't need another faceless megacorp.
I also received some screenshots from Canonical about the new release of Ubuntu on an email, and they asked me not to. It's just the same. They gave me the information, but I wasn't allowed to.
You weren't allowed to
release
it
before.
So they downloaded a release candidate of Ubuntu or upgraded through their upgrade repository, taken screenshots, sent them to you, and said, "This is under embargo."
It is, and all the links for the photographs were from Flickr. You go and figure.
I mean, I suppose in Canonical's defense, this is the PR company, and that's probably the way they're used to dealing with every other customer.
It must be, yeah.
It is the PR company, but it was also Jerry from Canonical also.
And a product manager as well.
Yeah. They were both well.
Are they doing well?
They look well.
when you mentioned that they were going to try and get Ubuntu onto lots more other hardware and OEMs, are they having any success with that?
I don't know.
It didn't sound like it.
It didn't sound like it.
Their answers were, what did they say? They said,
none in the UK thus far.
Yeah, and they said, we're working on it, hopefully in the next year, which...
Yeah, there was a lot of we're working on it.
Yeah,
That's what they said years ago, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are they still working on it?
They're still working on it.
Yeah.
I think my favourite bit of the conversation, which we are now allowed to report on, was that when I asked whether they were worried about people jumping ship from Ubuntu and deserting it in favour of something which has GNOME 2 rather than Unity, they just seemed, you know, shocked by the idea that anyone would do such a thing. Like, no. People leave Unity for tried and trusted GNOME on Linux Mint. No, why would they do that?
Wow.
Fools.
Might be their downfall.
Well...
Remains to be seen. What was the punishment for breaking the embargo? Were you not allowed to use Ubuntu ever again?
It didn't specify, but I don't want to risk it because I love Ubuntu.
And we love Mark Shuttleworth and his millions of pounds.
You've actually been using Unity quite a lot, though, haven't you?
I have, yeah. Apart from the time that I spent using GNOME 3 for the challenge, which is forthcoming.
Right, yes.
Unity looked all right on your machine.
It does look all right.
The Xbox.
Yeah. It looks a lot better than the rubbish GTK fallback version.
Oh, I thought that was all right too.
I thought the GTK
QT one.
Oh yeah, that.
The QT one.
It looks like GTK. It looks like unthemed basic GTK. It looks.
Did we not just think that was a bug though?
Well, it was a bug that was apparently known about, but it was in the release candidate about 2 weeks before the final deadline.
Right.
So I don't know whether they fixed it or not. We need some proper journalists to find out
go on and ask the right questions.
we asked some questions.
It must have been scary with all those embargoes and everything. We understand.
Handing over your kidneys as you walked across the threshold.
Moving on, Oracle has given up on OpenOffice.org. I guess a lot of us expected that this was coming with the LibreOffice fork and Oracle buying Sun, but they've issued a statement now. Edward Scraven, the chief corporate architect at Oracle, says, given the breadth of interest in free personal productivity applications and the rapid evolution of personal computing technologies, we believe the OpenOffice.org project will be best managed by an organization focused on serving that broad constituency on a non-commercial basis. Now, a lot of that sounds like usual buzzword tripe, like rapid evolution of personal computing technologies. Well, all computing technologies are evolving. But basically, they're saying, yeah, we want to hand it over to the community now, which is what OpenOffice.org was in the first place, wasn't it?
Unfortunately, I didn't click on the link that you sent because I was too busy reading the Wikipedia article on Tracy Ullman.
Okay, fair enough.
But didn't Sun and presumably Oracle employ lots of people to develop OpenOffice?
Yeah, this is what John and I were talking about the other day. There were so many people employed at Sun who were poking away through the massive, bloated, messy code base.
Well, presumably they had the whole of the Star Office team, you know, when they bought it.
I mean, it must have been a lot of Star Division, and they bought Star Office and maybe all of Star Division and then opened it up to the community, and now they're saying we're opening it up to the community again.
I'm not really convinced, though, that many people ever made... I'm not convinced many contributions were made from within...
Sun.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
It's a good question because Sun always maintained their own version.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was lots more work in that. Yeah.
I think like a lot of the new features and what was going into it was coming from IBM and Nivel.
I think you're right.
And Red Hat.
Michael Meeks.
I don't know how much came from Oracle or Sun or whoever owned it before that.
Yeah. But I guess it means they're losing their jobs or I suppose moved on to something else.
Could well be, yeah. I mean, I don't know how many of them will want to carry on contributing to LibreOffice anyway. I think the code base is getting better, but I saw something the other day that there's a project to clear up old German comments in the source code, which must have been there from the mid-90s. Looking around at the comments and discussions on the internet, nobody seems that bothered because we've got LibreOffice, because we've got the Go 00 branch in there. And
it's a great thing. It's a great thing for LibreOffice. And we've said it in these terms before. It's the same thing as X3, 86 and X.org.
X.org, yeah.
You know, and X.org went on to become rapidly developed, really full of features and much better as a result. And I really hope the same thing happens for LibreOffice.
Same here. I mean, as I understood it, LibreOffice was supposed to be just a temporary point, a temporary name and everything, because it's a bit of a fiddly, fudgy name to get out.
I quite like it.
Yeah,
I quite like it.
Is it still LibreOffice.org?
No, it's just LibreOffice.
It's way better. Yeah. Like, who wants to say,
I quite like LibreOffice as well.
Well, I just hope they can make a good marketing drive. I think the big reason for Firefox's success is that they had a really good website that was very clear. It sold the product well. They put some adverts in newspapers, and you just went there, clicked something, and you got it.
With Firefox as well, but it was a much better product than the competition at the time.
Yeah.
Compared to Internet Explorer 5. You know, when Firefox first came out, it was leaps and bounds ahead of everything else. But it had that.
I often have conversations with people who don't know anything about Linux and know something about free software or Firefox, and they can't believe that there's a product that's 95% compatible with Microsoft's own proprietary formats. And, you know, if a marketing campaign could go some way to addressing just saying, look, you can, for most people, you're not going to notice the difference, and it's free. You know, and your kids can use it, and it uses open standards.
But Graham, if it's free, surely it must be rubbish.
Or communist.
Well, yes, I know. But, you know, but we've got over that hurdle with Firefox.
Yeah, Firefox is probably the biggest flagship project for open source free software there's ever been. It's reached out far more people than Linux or anything else. So that's cool. And finally in the news, the Humble Bundle. It's a collection of games that's periodically
released.
This
is the third one.
It's the third game sale. They've announced you can get hold of 4 Linux games and you pay how much you want for them. You buy them from the Humble Bundle website.
I have difficulty with that. I said the same thing when I did it last time. The Humble Indie Bumble.
Naming, eh? But yeah, they all work perfectly on Linux. There's no DRM or activation or the other nonsense you get. And you choose to pay what you want. You can allocate some of the money to the developers, some money to charities, some to the Electronic Frontier Foundation if you want. So it looks pretty good.
It's brilliant. I think it's, and we've talked about the last two bundles where Linux users on average pay a lot more, something like $11 compared to Windows users, which pay $4 or $5 or $6.
Yeah.
And that, it's a fantastic, obviously Linux users want to pay for games. They're happy to play for games. And I think we've reviewed most of these, the Shadowgrounds games. But I will say that with the second Humble Indie Bundle, there was a game called Braid, which is a fantastic platform game. Not this one, the previous one.
Yeah.
And they created a Linux version specifically for that release. I think it's the same with Trini and this.
It might
be Trini. But Braid is no longer available in the as part of the Humble Indie Bundle 2, and you can't get it at all. So this is a plea to the developers of Braid to please make a standalone version that Linux users can buy.
But was it the first one or the second one where everything got open sourced from it?
Yes, that was the first one.
It was the first one, so that didn't happen with the second one.
No, it didn't happen with the second one.
So the source code isn't out there.
No. And so he created it for that release, and then I guess he's got other things to do. I'll just
put it on Fresh Meat or SourceForge or GitHub.
Instead of a PayPal account, you know, people can volunteer money. He get free money.
I'll make a website for
it's
him.
It's a great
I'll
game. Yes, please make Braid available so that we can review it and get some platform love. It's now time for Discovery of the Week.
Yay!
That's
cool.
I've done very badly. I haven't actually got one.
I've got three.
Oh,
three?
If I'd have known, I could have borrowed one of yours.
Yeah, well.
I've got a discovery, but it's not Linux related, which I hate doing. Everybody else does it, but I don't do it.
Well, go ahead.
I tend to.
No.
Why not?
It's very bad. Okay, well, I'll start with mine as it's not related to Linux.
Tracy Ullman?
No. Although Tracy Ullman is worth $75 million.
What?
It's incredible. Tracy Ullman. It was in the 80s. She was a pop star,
and she wore my
pop tune called Sunglasses. And she went on.
The link was because it had been 20 years since the first episode of The Simpsons recently, and The Simpsons started off on the Tracey Ullman show in the late 80s or the early 90s, if it was 20 years. And that was the link. That's what led me to the Wikipedia entry on Tracey Ullman.
When you were supposed to be reading about OpenOffice.org.
Yeah, I know. It's okay. This is something actually I was talking to John about earlier on. And where is it on my proprietary device? Here it is. Okay, tomorrow, which is the 29th of April, or 29th of April, tomorrow evening at 9 o'clock, if it's good weather in the south of England, we should be able to see the space shuttle Endeavour, which is about 20 minutes after its launch, along with its external fuel tank, which should have just separated from
it.
Whoa!
That's
so it's
cool.
Just the right time in the evening, because the sun's gone down, obviously, at ground level, but it, up in orbit, it's shining brightly on the two. And with the space, you know, this year being the last year for space shuttle flights, it's going to be a fantastic opportunity to see the two and to actually see the fuel tank separated from the shuttle. I really must remind myself to go out and have a look.
What time is that?
It'll be at about 9 o'clock tomorrow night.
We'll be finishing my DIY by that
time. You can step outside with a cup of tea. that was my discovery.
And make sure you don't drink too much Pimm's when you're celebrating the royal wedding.
Oh, don't keep talking about it.
But Effie's the only one of us who's contractually obliged to celebrate the royal wedding because I
got to go.
Did you swear allegiance to the royals when you moved to our green and pleasant land?
Yeah, but I didn't know I was doing that. I was just reading a text.
So you were confused.
Yeah, I'll do it, whatever.
Okay, Mike, you've got three.
I've got three, but they're quite small. The first is that 30% of videos on YouTube are responsible for 99% of views on YouTube.
Yeah.
How many? 30-odd percent?
30% of all the videos on YouTube are responsible for 99% of all the videos that are viewed. So
I'm surprised it's as many as that.
Yeah. I'm surprised.
That's the opposite of the long tail, isn't it?
Yeah, I thought it would be like 5 or 10% of, you know, cats and things like that falling over would be responsible for 99%.
Is that judged by duration of the videos or number of views?
Just number of views. Yeah. This was something on Google's blog they announced just recently, because they're talking about the move to WebM. So I just thought that's an interesting statistic.
Yeah, that's good for Google. It's probably, like, they're probably trying to sell it as monetizing, you know, if the top videos are, I assume it's for higher quality videos, like they can sell that to advertisers and content creators.
Yeah.
The second discovery is that the Danish word for ultra fast is ultra hurtig. Cool. So it's on the website. And the third discovery is just a small thing. It's just that I discovered that I'm a better programmer than everybody who works on X.org.
Mike wins.
I am. I really, really am. I'm genuinely serious about this, because I saw another forum thread where somebody had tried to install Linux and it just left them at a text console. So, as usual, I've had so many emails and so many phone calls about this over the years of people trying to install Linux and it doesn't detect their graphics hardware and falls back. I've got two lines of assembly language, MovAX12H and Int10H. If you do that in real mode, it tells the BIOS to switch to 640 by 480 by 16 colors graphics mode, and it works everywhere because I've done it. I wrote it into macOS and put it on a USB key and plugged it into loads of machines. I can set up VGA graphics mode to work everywhere as a fallback in two lines of assembly code.
Yeah,
and the X.org people can't do that, and they make Linux look really bad.
Why is there no fallback mode?
I don't know. Windows 95 had safe video mode 16 years ago. Yeah. It would fall back to that. It's ugly, and it looks broken, but at least you can then use a web browser. At least you can then try and go and download a driver or get help.
Well, distributions like Ubuntu do it.
But, well, some do,
Why can't it go back upstream and just become part of it?
Why can't it be default? Yeah, if it doesn't work, if the video mode switch doesn't work, then say VGA16 that everything supports, that I can program in two lines. Yeah. So if they want to hire me for a huge amount of money, although I've just read out the source code. It is real mode code, in fairness, so you'd have to switch back to real mode or do it at the beginning of the start the boot up sequence. But nonetheless, it's possible. So there we go. Go ahead, John.
Cool. I came across a website, someone was asking last week, maybe a week before, about how you can figure out where to report bugs or contribute upstream. I came across a website, compatibility.appspot.com or something like that, which is trying to get all upstream projects to report where they have their bug reports, where their forums are, where their mailing lists are. And so you can just go to this one website, and I think the idea is that, like, in their help files, they can put in a single static URL, and then if the maintainer changes or whatever, it'll always be consistent upstream, and you can always get access to that information.
That's a good idea.
It made a lot of sense. I've described it terribly. Check out the website. Yeah. But it's really cool, and everyone should do it.
I think we should probably write something about this kind of thing in a future issue of the magazine, because it is important. Also, Mike found a link this week which was some exasperated bug reporter who just reported bugs after bug and nothing ever changes, because there's always a version bump in whatever the chosen project is. And you know, people who put real effort in, we ask for people to make a contribution when they're not technical enough to make a programming commitment. You know, this is what they do, and they often get ignored.
That was Jamie Zawinski, actually, the Mozilla Netscape guy. Yeah,
cool.
Efrain?
My discovery of the week is I have discovered that my 6-year-old daughter, Rosie, has been using open source software for the past 2 years.
What, without you knowing?
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's running Arch Linux.
She's been writing for Ubuntu. Now, last weekend, she asked me to print something that she was doing on a laptop at home. And then I realized it's a drawing of our family. And I asked her, What did you use to do this drawing? And she said, Tux Paint, Daddy. And I went, all right, so where did you learn to use Tux Paint? At school, Daddy. No, that's right. So I find she's been learning it at school for the last 2 years, and she was 4 since reception year. And the guy, I had a chat with the guy that runs the IT department at school, and he decided to implement not just Tux Paint, but other things like OpenOffice.org back then, and that's what they teach him at
that's
school.
Brilliant.
That's just quite mental.
Really, really good. Why did you ask him why he'd chosen it, or what kind of resistance he'd had in getting it done?
He said that the first thing was because it was free and the interface is really easy to use for kids, and he find the interface of Tux Paint really the kids find it great fun to use, and Tux makes funny noises when you try to save and try to close windows and stuff like that. So they love that. They love that kind of stuff. They find it more of a game, but a productive game at the same time, that sort of thing.
That's an article that needs writing for Linux format, is open source in schools.
Yeah.
We have done it. We have done it before.
We have done it, but yeah, it's something that we always get lots of feedback on.
Yeah, but it's something that's not obvious.
It's in use in schools, but no one knows.
There's
at least one school in Cornwall I know where a secondary school, I think, where it's exclusively open source now.
Wow.
I think.
Yeah, it's something we should definitely go back to. That's brilliant. Yeah.
So that's my discovery. No, nothing to do with enchiladas today, so there you go.
Andrew?
That just leaves me. I discovered while I was writing the roundup for LXF issue 145.
A brilliant roundup, a really good roundup.
Well, thanks, Graham. It's going to be on sale on the 28th of this month.
That's today.
It's going to be on sale today.
Woo! In England.
Yeah, yeah. And Wales.
And the other things.
Other constituent parts of whatever.
Isle of Man.
Yeah, and my discovery is that I was using Songbird, which is a music player, and it pipes. So if you're listening to Elvis, it pipes images from the interwet. The interwet?
The interwet. There's an idea.
From the interweb it pipes images into the bottom of the window, so you can look at pictures of, for example, Elvis while you're listening to Elvis. There's a sort of a rich, content-rich, multimedia
sounds
experience.
What happened when you listen to Meat Is Murder, then?
Well, what happened when I listened to Suede? is that Songbird grabbed a picture of Stockholm from the internet and piped it up alongside pictures of suede slippers and a suede belt. And a suede shoe and what looks like some nail varnish. I don't know what it was thinking there. And one actual photo of the band Suede.
You're actually looking at the screen.
The actual screenshot, yeah. It took me a while to work it out, but the picture of Stockholm, it's because Suede is spelt the same as La Suède, which is the French word for Sweden.
Ah, ha, ha, ha. Right.
And I was just like, what's going on there? So I thought that was brilliant, really.
That just adds so much to music. Random Google image retrieval.
But random Google image retrieval is what I use the internet for about 50% of the time. So it makes it easier. It makes everything better. There we go.
Great.
Awesome discoveries, folks. Thanks very much.
And with such Swedish goodness, we come to the halfway point of this podcast. Still to come, You Dare Us. We have our Speak Your Brain section. And, of course, the open ballot. Has desktop fragmentation gone too far?
So, it's time for You Dare Us.
Hey!
Where last week we dared ourselves, I think. No one actually wrote in.
And we didn't actually tell anyone, did we?
So we just decided after the podcast, privately, while sitting at our desks, that we would use a name show for a week or two.
Yeah. 2 weeks, you have to say 2 weeks, even though we only did it for a few hours.
We decided to use name show for 2 weeks, and how do we get on? Graham?
Yeah, I did use it solidly for about 3 days. It's difficult for me because I use KDE. With Windows in lots of window mode, you know, that I have like 3 or 4 windows on the screen at any one time. So a single kind of tiled window manager has never been my thing. But my first impressions, at least from the Ubuntu PPA, which I don't know, maybe they disabled or crippled it in some way to look bad, but it looked pretty bad. I couldn't find a way of theming anything or changing stuff that I wanted to change. Couldn't change the background. Couldn't get things on the background, which I think is a terrible waste of screen real estate when I'm actually still running things in window mode. I've got a quite high resolution display, you know, 1600 pixels wide, which means that when a web browser is in full screen mode, I only get like a narrow column, a typical normal browser. So, and also if I put 2 web browsers next to one another in the split screen mode of GNOME Shell, there's not enough quite to see a whole page. So I have to run it windowed. So I'm using it in normal windowed mode. So I thought it looked ugly. I thought on my machine, which is quite fast, it's a dual core Athlon 64-bit, something like 4 gigahertz CPU. I found the screen sometimes slow to respond, especially right-clicking on the applications in the applications view or in the quick launcher. Found the same with on-screen notifications. Instant messaging through the on-screen notifications was really awkward. There seemed to be 3 different ways to have a conversation with someone who popped up on your IM chat. Firstly, you could actually respond to them directly in the lower border of the screen. So somebody says hello, you can type down their hello. Sometimes that chat would move over to the bottom right part of the screen where there was a bottom right chat log view. And then sometimes you could get the original pigeon view, which is the old pigeon instant messenger client appearing, which seemed really, really bizarre and not at all well thought out. And that's about it. I wanted to drag things to the desktop. I wanted to change how things looked. It was a difficult speed bump for me to get over, and I never got to the point where I thought, no, this is the right thing to do. They've made the right decisions. I did like the way that it has some semi-GNOME do ability in that you can quick launch things and get to applications with a quick shortcut. I like the way that you can quickly go through your applications list and filter things and files, hopefully files in the 3.2 release. It's promising, but I think it's mad as the default choice.
Yeah, I've got to admit, I used it for a while, and there were some things I started to like about it as well, like being able to hit the super key, the Windows key, and then be able to just type a program and have it come up immediately. But I can understand this type of design being suitable for a netbook or something with low resolution or limited screen space.
Yeah.
But trying to have the same thing amongst such a broad range of hardware like PCs, from small screens to big screens and laptops and stuff, is just madness to me.
Yeah.
And the excuse, as I mentioned last podcast, the excuse that they give for removing things like a dock or Windows list because it's a constant distraction to switch focus, I think is an insult. Completely yes. insulting. I never looked down at my dock or my panel in XFCE and go, oh, I need to change programs here.
There's no date. Did you know how to get the date onto the top toolbar, the top panel? I couldn't work out how to do that.
No, just the time. You have to click
Things like that.
Do you know, things like that, I don't miss. I've been using it. It's all I use now. I'm probably not going to switch back. It's probably just.
So you're going to carry on using GNOME Shell?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
That's good.
And maybe Epiphany as well, but different story. But I haven't missed having a window list of a bottom of the screen, and you know, you said you found the performance bad, but you're using it with what, NVIDIA?
Yeah, with proprietary NVIDIA
drivers.
Which I think
there's a known bug about that, whereas I'm using it on an integrated Intel chip, which obviously excellent, you know, driver support for, but it's flawless, it runs really fast. Memory usage is really quite small. It's like maybe 100 megabytes or something for the whole environment, which isn't bad, I don't think.
It seems to me that they've taken a lot of ideas from Apple, like the expose for the Windows.
Yeah, but then there's been Encompass as well for...
Yeah, but that was still, it's still in OS X first. And the new toggle switches from iOS and things. And when you get modal dialog boxes, like about box or save, they pop out of the title bars from...
Do you know, stuff like that, I don't care if it's stolen. If it works and it looks good it's useful, but I think steal it.
Some things they haven't implemented very well. So it's like you hit the... super key, the Windows key to bring up Expose, and on OS X you can then use the cursor keys to select a window and enter. You have to then go pick up the mouse, which kind of defies the point of using the keyboard. Yeah, I don't think they've thought about those kind of things very, very well.
But you know, that's the kind of thing that's going to, after using for 6 months or whatever, when 3.2 comes out, you know, people are going to be reporting bugs. They're going to be reporting usability issues from day to day use. And like, I've been reading the GNOME mailing lists with talk. You know, they started planning 3.2 now, and they're already talking about trying to round up reviews and find out the top five most annoying things about it to sort out those and get them fixed. You know, they care. They actually really care. They're trying really hard to get this right.
But they should have learned that what KD did with KD 4.0 was a massive mistake. You know, it should never have been released. And that's what worries me about.
But then if you don't, you know, if you never release something, if you wait for it to be perfect to get rid of all those bugs, you're just not going to get the people using it. You're not going to find the bugs.
People like me have tried it now. And like people said about KD at the time, I don't know. It'll take a lot for me to go back.
Would you have tried it if it hadn't been 3.0 final release? Like, would you have given it a proper try and be making these comments now?
No, I wouldn't.
So then this may, you know, I don't know, it may be a necessary step.
But if I was just a user at home, and, you know, I tried it, and then I'd probably go back to whatever my usual desktop was, you know, and not try it again, unless you actually have an obligation to try it.
But I think that's maybe not so much down to the GNOME team, though, as much just like for the distributions to say we're going to support GNOME 2.8 or whatever it was for another 6 months. But please try this as well. You know, the distribution should give both the options, especially people like Fedora, who are really there to try and support upstream. That's what they should be doing.
So I'll only move to 3.2 by default when it's had some of these bugs and limitations.
Yeah, perhaps. You know, I don't know what the answer is, but I do think what they're doing, they're trying really hard. I think maybe this is a necessary step to get to a really good quality end product. I do think it's moving in the right direction. I'm pleased with it.
I think it should have been 2.9. If it was a piece of commercial software, if this was Cubase version 6, it would never be acceptable. You know, you expect to upgrade to Cubase 6 and to get lots of great features and to be surprised by how brilliant they've approached something. And it's just not the same.
I think they have to come out with 3.2 quite quickly or something to fix a few of these little glitches, limitations.
How did you two go?
I haven't used it. I've been really busy with the Mac. I haven't had a chance, but I promise I'll do it.
The old being really busy with the Mag excuse. Well, I'd used it before for, what was it, about 2 months ago for the What on Earth. And I don't know, it didn't seem to work terribly well on Linux Mint, which is what I tested it on. I don't know, I've been using Unity and it just doesn't look very good compared to Unity. It's more
the same.
Just what? What? Why interrupt?
They look the same. I'm going to cut this out.
Who are you?
I'm going to make a spot for
new boy.
I'll go back to Cornwall now.
No, it does cover a lot of the same ground that well, Unity and Gnome Shell, but Gnome 3 appears to be more ambitious to me, but Unity is more polished. And I definitely take the criticism that it shouldn't have been a 3.0 release. 2.9 is more accurate of what it can do and how well it does it. But certainly when 3.2 comes out, I'll give it another go then.
I'll say, mate, I will, because if they fix some of the things that I found annoying and they're perhaps slightly more flexible in the design.
And plus, I've only just got my head around KDE 4, and I now think KDE 4 is great. I've not quite got myself up to using it all the time, but I have used it and I find it perfectly usable.
Whoa.
It's now, for me, it's as good as KDE 3 was.
Whoa.
And when did KDE 4 come out? It's like, three years ago or something.
Yeah.
Ages and ages.
That was a disaster. And I don't want the same thing to happen.
No, exactly. As long as GNOME 3 isn't forced on people by default, which looks like it might happen.
Yeah. What is the consensus of opinion on the GNOME mailing list, John? Do they feel that it's been received well?
I think they're pleased with the release. I think, they've all worked really hard. Yeah, I think they're pleased with what they put out. I think they recognise that there's some frustrations and annoyances. But
it's what they wanted.
I wonder if there's an element of the fact that they're really, they've got these set of ideas and they're convinced that they're right, perhaps, and everyone else is wrong. I don't know if that's a fair estimation of it. There's a sense you get a bit sometimes. Hopefully they're going to be open enough to listen to feedback and to try and add some of the stuff that people really find is lacking, even if it doesn't quite fit with their original vision.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's a good thing, though.
What, being really confident in their vision?
The sense that they're right and everybody else is wrong. Because if you have the attitude that everybody has a valid opinion and everybody must be allowed to have their say, then you just get an appalling mishmash of compromise and features all over the place.
There's got to be some flexibility there as well.
Well,
hope.
A bit.
Otherwise, you guys are never going to use Gnome 3 though, if it doesn't sort out some of the stuff we've brought up here today.
Yeah, I want to be able to use the expose functionality with the keyboard as well.
But that seems like, the other thing about it is it's really extensible as well. So, you can write extensions for it in JavaScript and you can theme it using CSS. So anyone who knows how to write a web page can actually modify this and design it and make it look super cool.
Turn it back into GNOME 2.
GNOME 2. Or, you can also, there's already an extension that lets you hold down the Alt key so that it numbers the windows in Expose, I think, so you can select them by number.
That's kind of what I'd like, yeah.
I think either that or in the overview mode.
That's kind of like Unity.
Yeah, yeah, it is, but someone's just written that as an extension. So it's going to be like Firefox, I think, is kind of the idea, where you get this really basic, straightforward experience, which should be quick and easy to use out of the box. But then you can start customizing it endlessly for your own...
Well, that's perhaps the best solution then. If they've got this very clear, pure vision of the desktop, then ship it like that.
Yeah.
And most people install Firefox and don't use extensions. Most people use it like that. But those of us who've been using other desktops for years and have certain demands, if I can then download Taskbar extension and choose to have it my way, then that's a perfect...
I think that is kind of a plan, perhaps.
Well, that's
but
great.
Whether it turns out, well, I don't know. And maybe we should try and write an extension sometime, find out what's involved.
Yeah, it's a good idea. It's a great idea for tutorial. Mm.
And now, the second and probably final installment of Speak Your Brains. After great success in the previous episode, we had a grand total of 3 respondents to this section where you, the listeners, write in and tell us things. And actually, only 2 of those were emails. One of them was somebody posted in the comment section, which wasn't allowed. So anyway, let's do this one more time and enjoy it. Milom, however you pronounce it, said, I just thought the team should see this. One of the most awesome/terrible game concepts around. Yes, better/worse than Pink Pony. It's entitled Space Plumber. And if you don't think that sounds terribly awesome enough, for short, it's Splummer. I found it whilst exploring the darkest corners of the Arch Linux gaming repo. That's at triptico.com/software. Space Plumber.
Well, we can't. What does it give any? Have you tried it?
No.
What? Just the name then. Just the name.
We have the name to go on.
But let us know, listeners, what you make of
it. To be fair, the name is often enough to for me to decide. I mean, for example, yeah. G-Scrot, I know I'm never going to use, but Pink Ponies is...
Naturally.
It's the best thing since sliced pony.
Someone called Mike Linux, which is quite a coincidence if that is his real surname, wrote in to say... are we forcing Linux users to switch to Windows or Macs? The proof? One, the perfect thing for Linux is actually an April Fool's joke, the Canterbury Project.
Yeah.
Sounds a lot like what I said last time. He says, two, Debian, the most stable Linux that doesn't even have Firefox. Try explaining to a new user about Iceweasel or Icedove. And three, Fedora 15, a brave new GNOME 3, a perfect Linux future that considers multitasking capability a distraction. Maybe we should all go into single desktop and single Windows with only being able to start a single app at a time, a la the iPad. So, a bit of harsh criticism there from Mike Linux. It seems to reflect some of the things we've been saying.
Yeah. I think there's an element of what he's saying is right. I don't think we're probably pushing Linux users back to Windows or OS X necessarily.
I don't think it's that far, no.
But it will make it, I mean, things like GNOME Shell that are a different desktop paradigm, if that's what the word is, are going to make it hard for someone to come from Windows. They take a look at it and they're going to think, what's that? You know, if they use PC Linux OS or something like that, or Mepis, they're going to feel a lot more comfortable and at least know how it works. But it only takes 10 minutes. But
well, it's such a complicated argument, isn't it? Because on the one hand, that's true. But on the other hand, if you take something like the iOS interface on the iPad, anybody can pick that up. Nobody seems to have problems with that. And that's very different.
And that's the big... people are less and less likely to be coming from Windows. They're more likely to have come from an iPad or that some sort of touchscreen interface.
Yeah, or looking to move to that. You know, that's what they look for in a new OS. Yeah.
And finally, an awesome guy or girl who calls themselves Evolution Data Server Addict says, I have heard of GTK3, but what will this mean for end users? Could you explain to the non-programmer what kinds of things GTK3 apps will be able to do that GTK2 apps couldn't?
Considering we didn't plant that question, the issue that's just about to go on sale answers that really well. I think we've got a four-page feature on GTK plus 3.
It does.
Really?
I'm going to look at it now to answer the question immediately. Words simplifying. It's supposed to be simplifier, making it easier to port applications, better help for application programmers and users to achieve a desired effect with geometry, new theming API with CSS, more widgets, better platform integration. I think the style sheets thing is quite big, which John mentioned.
Yeah, I think that's huge.
Yeah.
In terms of getting real designers onto the Linux platform, makes it so much more accessible.
Yeah. So you can buy our magazine, Linux Format, issue 145, and read 4 juicy pages about that. So thanks to you three for getting in touch. It looks like Speak Your Brains is dead. So what should we do now?
We haven't really got a good idea, have we? We might try in the dock again next time, and then if we get any more Speak Your Brains answers, we'll try it again.
Could we resurrect the Wheel of Destiny?
We could resurrect the Wheel of Destiny. Maybe people could let us know what you'd like to see.
Yeah. What feature?
This one could be a random feature.
Yes.
Feature.
Yeah.
So where we choose something to do. You know, it could be something we've done before. It could be something new.
It could. Somebody could suggest that we jump through a hoop of fire. And we will do it.
Yeah.
Well, I will do it.
What about tips on DIY? Someone sent me some tips.
Tips on DIY.
Tips on DIY. If anybody here knows how to do any DIY.
Yeah. Just general DIY.
But yeah, listeners, let us know. What could we use this section for? Come up with any ideas, however wacky and wild they are, and we'll probably say, no, it's going to take too much time. but we'll still give it a go anyway.
It's open ballot o'clock.
Hey!
We asked, has desktop fragmentation gone too far? And you told us. And how?
as paper rustles throughout the podcast.
Most people said, in fact, out of 38 people who got back in touch with us, 25 and a half people said no. Choice is good. Obviously, I'm simplifying here. And 7.5 people said yes, many desktops are bad.
Right.
The extra people were being too subtle.
Say yes
too,
or no.
Too clever for my tiny little mind.
Never mind.
But hopefully we'll have no such clever trickery from the panel sitting around the table here. Mike, you've let us know on occasion what you think of the proliferation of desktop environments.
Yeah, I think you can't stop anybody from making lots of desktops, and it's pretty cool that there's FVWM at one end and then KD at the other. But there's so much where people are just trying to achieve the same thing, and there's a lot of duplication in that. And So if you're just interested in Linux purely technologically, then it doesn't matter, fair enough, and I can understand all those people. But if we want it to get beyond its 1%, 2% desktop market share, we need to think about it like a consumer thinks about it, in which case we've got far too many desktops doing the same thing. If you imagine someone going into an Apple store, for instance, if Apple had 100 slightly different iPads with slightly different default apps and slightly different user interfaces and different configuration tools requiring different documentation, people would walk out. People would get scared and confused and walk out. It'd be very hard to sell those products. So now, whatever you think about the iPad, it's a very popular product that has good customer satisfaction. So we need to approach it like that. We will always have lots of obscure window managers, but we should focus all our efforts onto appealing to customers.
I think you're right. I think the issue here is that people who are already using Linux do so in part because they like to have the choice and they like to have their own configurations and they have their own distro and they have their own desktop. And that's a big part of why a lot of us use Linux and like it. But it's a different issue, I think, when you're trying to attract new people,
yeah,
new general computer users. If you want people to move from Windows, I think there has to just be a single simple Linux, and a single desktop is part of that. Whatever it happens to be, I don't see why behind the scenes there can't remain the choice. And there has to be, because it's a great ecosystem for great ideas to bubble through and become part of the main desktop.
Yeah.
But I think for new users who don't know what Linux is, it's so much easier and simpler if there's just one interface. And if Canonical and the GNOME guys, who I know would have rather done perhaps work together over the last 3 years on a single desktop shell for the new GNOME, I think it would have been a lot better.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, we wouldn't have had the conversation we had. They're so similar.
Yeah,
and
why?
And yet the effort has been split in two, you know, and I'd much rather see a single stronger desktop from the two of them than two half finished ones.
But even with those divisions, the intentions, the original intentions are really good. It's to make the two desktops usable and accessible for the type of people that you're talking about. If you are new on the Linux environment, it is the two of them are a really good option because they're accessible, they're easy to use, relatively easy to use, and that is the complication, like you said, when you're trying to not to convert, but to attract new users into the environment. I think that's the only value that you can get from Unity and the last version of GNOME.
Yeah.
Two conflicting opinions. First, from Kiwi on the subject of new users. This may sound like an odd statement, but I fully believe that the desktop fragmentation, is one of the key strengths to Linux. It provides the users, possibly for the first time if they're coming from a certain MS distro, with total freedom and the ability to personalize their computers to their own pleasure. The scenario is a dream for the experienced user, as they can choose their own environment to suit their needs. For example, it's pointless running GNOME or KDE if all you want is a backend to your XBMC media center. What do you think to that? Do you think many new users coming from Microsoft will want to fiddle about their desktop environment?
Why don't we ask the question after 10 years of hype and talk about Linux on the desktop? It's 98% of people in the world don't use it, and that's not all because of evil 10 microshaft source. I've watched forums for years and I've seen people get so confused, and they try and read documentation, it works for one desktop and not the other, and then they ask why this one, why that one. It is a big problem, and everybody's saying no, it's all fine. Ask why the vast majority of people don't use Linux. This is a cause.
I wonder.
Anything else is just wrong.
I wonder as much as anything if it's not to do with fragmentation in the desktop that's a problem, though, although I think that's really sad. It's also the quality of the applications a lot of the time. You know, people don't use a computer because they like the way the desktop works. They use it because the applications let them get done what they want to get done.
Yeah.
So if you can't, you know, if you don't have a decent video editing application or a decent photo editing application that's usable for normal people, then people aren't going to use it.
Sure. If InDesign ran on Linux, then Future Publishing would save an absolute shed load of money by ditching exactly, OS X and moving straight up to
Linux.
We
focus too much on the desktop.
I wonder. I think the developers focus too much on the desktop as well. Like, I think it is important, but I think more important is the applications.
Yeah, I think it's a really good point. Also, I was just going to say that the thought that when you first mentioned defragmentation, I had an interesting thought about hard drive fragmentation and the fact that performance is so drastically reduced when the drive head's effort is spinning all over the disk to get to bits of data, and how better it is when it's just a single block.
Linux win. Linux win. Another issue that we've not quite come to yet. Happy Penguin says, I believe the problem is not the amount of different desktop environments out there, but the fact that they don't share key technology and thus thwart the natural advantage that Floss apps hold. And that's supported by Padfoot, who says, I don't think desktop environmental fragmentation is a problem. It's the interoperability between them and standardization of distros that's the problem. And also, I really should try and print out supporting arguments on the same piece of paper. JJ Mac says, if the environment is designed with a Unix paradigm in place, using generic constructs, then there should never be any problems with intractability. Whether it's GTK or Qt widget set is not an issue, but when an environment chooses to impose the extensive use of their own libraries for everything else, the motive becomes obviously one of attempting to tie in a person to that particular system. Mm. So not so much the difference in widgets, where the start menu is, where the shutdown menu is, but actually the way that they work with applications.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense.
It does. It makes an awful lot of sense. Effie, have you got anything sensible to say?
But I was going to support what one of the comments. One of the points in your comments about the standards, it is about the standards and the different distros. If all of them follow the same pattern, we will not have this conversation at all. New users, they don't really care what desktop environment they're using. All they want is a computer that it works, that is not Microsoft or Apple. They want something that is functional and accessible. And I think if everything goes right with the new versions of Unity and GNOME and the other desktop environments, probably we will be changing our views in, I don't know, in about 2 years' time, or I hope so. The reason, and I think that's the reason why the market share on Linux is not as good as the other two platforms. That's it.
Thanks for bringing up Unity. Calls your favourite project irrelevant man, not verified, says, the presence of hundreds of tiny fractious projects need not detract from the success of one. That one is probably Unity. So long as Ubuntu has its growing market share, GNOME, GNOME 2, KDE, XFCE, LDE, E17, Fluxbox Awesome, Xmonad, 40-odd tiling window managers and Elementary will all remain safely irrelevant. That seems quite harsh. But Josh seems to find that unacceptable. Imagine if all the GNOME, OpenBox, XFCE, KDE, etc. desktops suddenly disappeared and all we had was Unity. Would everyone be happy? Of course not. It would be a disaster.
Well, with that important debate that I think we've had several times before now... I see you've come back in the room.
I have, yeah. I decided to come back after that very strange debate before.
You look a lot better now.
Thanks. Yes. That's because I just discovered something really, really cool about Tux, the Linux Penguin mascot. Why is he called Tux? Why?
Larry Ewing.
Yeah, he drew it, the original design.
Sorry, I was interrupted. I should be fined 5 points.
Okay.
Is it because penguin suits look a little bit like their tuxedos?
Well, that's what I always assumed. Any idea, John?
No. Well, Linus Torvalds likes penguins.
Yeah.
That's the reason.
Why is it called Tux?
It got bitten by a penguin.
Yeah, why is it called Tux?
because that's like tucking into somebody. That's like, it's got an X in it. X, Unix.
Yeah. That is actually it.
Is Tux Finnish for, penguins just bit me.
Although he speaks Swedish, doesn't he, Torvald? So
it's all the same.
Just foreign. It is actually apparently something to do with the X being Unix. The first person to call the penguin Tux was a guy called James Hughes on the Linux kernel mailing list back in 1996. They were having a discussion about what to call the penguin. And he said, Torvald's Unix, T-U-X, Tux. So there we go. Oh, that was the origin.
That's great.
Who did this research?
Me.
Who is that? Yeah?
Well, I use Wikipedia.
Right,
so.
Okay. I want to know who was there originally sat, you know, thinking, oh, I'm going to research the history of Tux and trawling through Linux mailing list archives back to 1996 to find the first usage.
That's what proper Linux journalists do.
Yeah.
What, use Wikipedia?
Yeah, Tracy Ullman. Thanks. Thanks, Mike. And thanks for listening. That was episode 8 of our podcast. Join us again in another 2 weeks. If you've got a long weekend here in the UK, have a nice one. Try not to be brought down by any other events. And we'll see you again. Don't forget, you can subscribe at tuxradar.com/subscribe, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks. Bye.
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 Cheers.
Bye.